We are with you. What about you? Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
From our Imams, the ninth Imam is the first, whose Imamat began at a very young age, about 8 or 9.
As-salamu alayka ya Abu Ja'far, Muhammad ibn Ali al-Barakat.
Peace be upon you, O Abu Ja'far, Muhammad the son of Ali, the righteous, the pious.
This is Dialogue, a program on the famous conversations of Imam Muhammad ibn Ali al-Jawad alayhi salam. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. I'm your host Mahdi, and we're talking about the dialogues of Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam. Imam Muhammad ibn Ali al-Jawad alayhi salam was the direct descendant of the Holy Prophet Muhammad, the Messenger of Allah. And His Eminence was the ninth divinely appointed Imam from among the household of the Holy Prophet. We find many proofs for the great treasure of his knowledge and wisdom. One of the great proofs of the great treasure of knowledge and wisdom of Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam is that while His Eminence was still in his tender youth, the Shia jurisprudence, after the martyrdom of Imam al-Raza alayhi salam, hastened towards the city of Medina. They came to inquire as to know who is the next infallible and divinely appointed Imam. The reliable people and those who were trustworthy guided these Shia jurisprudents who had come from different places in the Islamic world towards Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam. The Shia jurisprudents went to Imam al-Jawad and asked His Eminence the most ambiguous and complicated of questions. And yet Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam answered each and every one of them.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parsetoday.ir.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back, dear listeners. It's great to have you with us. You're listening to Dialogue on IRIB English Radio. So, dear friends, we are talking about the dialogues of Imam Muhammad ibn Ali al-Jawad alayhi salam, the ninth divinely appointed Imam. In one of such conversations of the divinely appointed Imam, Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam, we find that Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam talks about individuals who conceal guidance. Now, as we had said in some of our program, it's really important for us to realize the time and age in which Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam was living in. It was, of course, a time where different sects of the Muslims had been created and began to spread. Of course, the Hanafi sect, based upon the teachings of Abu Hanifa, the Maliki sect, based upon the teachings of Anas ibn Malik. Of course, these were starting to be put out there. They were starting to be strengthened by the governmental establishment. And of course, when it came to the divine guidance of the divinely appointed Imams, many of the people in power, whether they were scholars or non-scholars, they tried to conceal this identity and this aspect of the divinely appointed imams. Of course, if the identity of the wilaya and the authority and the political and social and religious and cultural and economic power of the imams was to be manifested and shown to the people, then of course the religious scholars, pseudo-religious scholars, and the political establishment both would have been destroyed and it would crumble, and of course power would have been given to the divinely appointed imams. And so of course this is why we see that there is a great deal of concealment and deception when it came to the issue of guidance. Now, with this in context, we find in one of these conversations where the divinely appointed imam was speaking about certain agents and followers of the government who conceal the divine guidance, and in general, they conceal guidance overall from the nation, from the people, from the ummah, of course, which leads to a deterioration in social, political, economic, and cultural aspects. And so it's interesting that even though these people might try to show kindness, they might try to show mercy, in reality they are enemies because they are hiding guidance. And so the imam is here teaching a lesson to his companion when he says that he who conceals guidance from you just for the sake of their desires is your enemy. So, of course, here we find twofold things for the present day. One is that the individual who is your friend will do their best to guide you, to help you, to assist you in succeeding and reforming and developing yourself. That is your friend. And on the other hand, your enemy is an individual who will conceal guidance from you. And if we add, not only will your enemy conceal guidance from you, but they will manifest falsehood to you. They will promote the spreading of lies and corruption and decadence. And so in a world where we find this massive cultural invasion going on by the West, if they are promoting things that are false, then they are the enemies of the world. And truly, they are promoting falsehood. What else are they promoting in the present day? And so a very powerful lesson for every single one of us to remember that anyone and any power that is trying to conceal guidance and hide the guidance of Allah from the masses is most definitely one's enemy, and one should be very careful from these kind of individuals. This is Dialogue, Imam al-Jawad, alayhi salam. And now we invite you to listen to Sayyid Muhammad Ridhvi.
From our imams, the ninth imam is the first, whose imamat began at a very young age, about 8 or 9 years old. Basically, look at the special wisdom that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has given to our ninth imam. What is zinat? Beauty. But let us go to the hadith of the imam, where imam talks about a zinat in a very different level. At-tawazu' zinatul hasad. The literal translation would be that humility is beauty for hasab. Hasab means acquired character. There are two words in Arabic, Farsi, Urdu also, hasab and nasab. Nasab means what comes from the family, hereditary characteristics. And hasab means what is acquired. And Imam is now talking about the issue of humility, tawazu'. And he says, At-tawazu zinatul hasab. Means among the habits and the characteristics that you acquire, you are able to form your own character and your akhlaq. If you look for the beauty of it, it should be humility. And this is where we have to realize that when we talk about tawazu, the issue of humility, this is very important. It has been actually repeated again in other statements that will come to it.
Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of Dialogue. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.ir/en Call of Islam page, where you can find all of our previous programs and many other great programs as well. Until another episode, fi amanillah, and God bless you all.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Eruba Shavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pereza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
Italy is seriously mulling over resorting to developing its nuclear energy in this crucial geopolitical conjuncture. On Monday, three Italian energy firms, Ansaldo Energia, Ansaldo Nucleare and Edison Spa, announced that they have signed a letter of intent with major French utility Électricité de France, also known as EDF. The deal features collaboration on the development of new nuclear projects in Europe and, quote, to open a debate on the possible role of new nuclear power in Italy's energy transition.
L'obiettivo dichiarato da Edison è quello.
Italy's Edison Energy Company says it wants to produce its own nuclear energy starting from between 2030 and 2035. This would be obtained thanks to provisions which have introduced considerable simplifications of the procedures to build smaller and safer nuclear plants. However, the risk is that the projects may encounter strong opposition by local governments.
Italy closed its nuclear plants in 1990 after a referendum on atomic energy held 3 years earlier, following a new referendum held in 2011 when 94% of Italians voted again against the atomic option. The idea of a return to nuclear power seemed dead and buried. However, the energy crisis triggered by the war in Ukraine seems to have changed people's mind in Italy. According to latest surveys, while only 15% of Italians are fully supportive of nuclear energy, one in two Italians believe that switching back to nuclear energy could be a solution to the issue of high energy bills if safer and cleaner nuclear technology is employed.
I'm in favor of the nuclear option because we already buy nuclear-produced energy from France and Spain. And if there is an accident at the plants over there, we would also suffer from the consequences.
Nuclear energy is produced by several European countries these days. Why not in Italy? Maybe this decision should be adopted at a European level.
The issue of nuclear energy came up again in Italy in 2021, particularly following the former Mario Draghi's government expressing support for the return to nuclear power in the country. This was then followed by a consensual agreement voiced by the current Prime Minister, Giorgia Meloni. Max Civili, Rome.
Supporters of the People's Democratic Party, PDP, marched through the streets of Abuja, chanting and condemning the results of the just-concluded presidential election in Nigeria.
Why did you go by 4 a.m. to announce the results? What was the hurry if you have the seven days window? And then the chairman said that I will listen to all the petitions before we conclude this process. He went ahead and concluded the process and did not open a window for the review of those issues.
The demonstrators say the Independent National Electoral Commission, INEC, did not follow some provisions of the electoral laws in conducting the election, and in announcing the results.
800.
The demonstrators marched to the headquarters of the INEC in Abuja, where they demanded unsuccessfully to see the chairman of Nigeria's electoral body. The opposition PDP and the Labour Party have separately approached the Court of Appeal, challenging the outcome of the February 25 presidential election. The Court of Appeal, which serves as a presidential election petition court, has granted the request of the two political parties for access to inspect sensitive election materials. The demonstrators here said the protest is necessary in view of the gubernatorial and state houses of assembly elections coming up on 11th of March.
What we are here to do first is that the issue of their infractions in the last elections will be dealt with by the court. But going forward, how are we going to resolve this for the elections we have on the 11th of March? That is the most important question on the minds of Nigerians today.
Meanwhile, Nigeria's president-elect Bola Ahmed Tinubu has appealed to the opposition to come and join him to work for the unity and progress of Nigeria. Nigeria's president-elect is expected to be sworn in May 29, 2023, once the courts have established him as the winner of the elections. Danjuma Abdullahi, Abuja.
It's another ordinary day for Shivina Khan and her family living in the eastern part of New Delhi. Their family starts their day by reading their father's letters, which he wrote in jail, pleading his innocence regarding the riots that broke out in Delhi back in February 2020. The violence claimed dozens of lives, shattered many families and destroyed their property, claimed 53 lives, mostly of Muslims.
My husband was going to work, but on the way, riots sparked and he called me saying the situation is bad. Please be safe. In another 30 minutes, he said the riots had started even near his office. He was questioned for several days before being arrested for crime he never committed. I have three children and it's really hard for us to cope up with situations.
Another activist and mother of jailed student Umar Khalid says Muslims are now treated like terrorists in their own country. She said all the charges against his son are politically motivated and a deliberate attempt to demonize Muslims. She says the so-called Unlawful Activities Prevention Act, which is a draconian legislation amended in 2019 by the ruling BJP, allows authorities to declare an individual a terrorist and keep them in detention without trial for months or even years.
It's been 2.5 years since my son is in jail. He was arrested on September 2020 and the charges framed against him are completely false and baseless. He was arrested in connection with the Delhi riots in 2022 and the two FIRs have been registered. One of the charges is UAPA and it's not easy to get bail if such a charge is framed. Media these days is supporting false propaganda, but we have complete faith in our judiciary and we will fight for his release from the Supreme Court.
Umar and Salim are not just only victims languishing in jails without trials. Activists and critics accuse the authorities of accusing Muslim community members of a crime they did not commit. Based on reports by Human Rights Watch, police investigation in the cases were marked by bias, delays, inaccuracy, lack of proper evidence, and a failure to follow proper procedures. Reports suggest that the Indian government has in recent years adopted various laws and policies that are discriminatory towards the country's minorities. The ruling party is also accused of infiltrating country's courts and police, empowering Hindu nationalists to harass, threaten and attack religious minorities with impunity, and cracking down on any dissent. Munawar Zaman, New Delhi.
Iranians have observed the National Tree Planting Day as part of the Natural Resources Week by planting saplings across the country. The country has now launched a wider campaign to plant 1 billion trees in 4 years. Accordingly, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, marked the National Tree Planting Day by planting 3 saplings. Meanwhile, President Ebrahim Raisi went to the National Botanical Garden of Iran in Tehran to mark the event and start a campaign to plant 1 billion trees nationwide. The Natural Resources Week represents more than just planting trees. It's a strong message of protecting the environment and changing attitudes and lifestyles. Each tree means a gift from the current generation to posterity to have a green and healthy planet. National Tree Planting Day is annually celebrated on the 15th day of Isvan, the last month on the Iranian calendar. The day also marks the beginning of the National Week of Natural Resources.
Iranians have always paid special attention to nature. They believe planting saplings will make the world a better place to live for us, our children, and the generations to come. Salman Kujuri, Tehran.
Iran-Afghanistan Permanent Trade Center has been opened in the capital, Kabul. The center is in line with the two countries' policies of expanding bilateral ties and connecting business people of the two neighboring states. During the opening ceremony, Afghanistan's Minister of Industry and Commerce highlighted the country's expectations about trade between the two countries.
We expect to balance the trade with Iran. We want to export our goods to Iran, which enjoys a good market. Iran's export to Afghanistan is more than $2 billion a year, but I won't mention our export to Iran because it's a very small amount. We hope that Tehran modifies its laws so that we can increase our exports.
With the opening of this center in Kabul and its capabilities, it is believed that the Taliban government in Afghanistan is providing a platform for more economic connections between Tehran and Kabul.
This center is an example of good relations between Afghanistan and Iran. Both countries have a lot of potentials, and with the opening of this center, we hope that bilateral trade gets a big boost and Tehran and Kabul can be great partners.
The center has great capabilities which can have great effects on rebuilding Afghanistan and the war-torn country's infrastructure.
The priorities for this center are trade of industries, equipment and machineries, also food industry, mining industry and technology. We are also ready to set up an iron production line in Afghanistan. On the other side, mines and precious stones here are useful for Iran.
Iranian and Afghan officials hope that the center helps advance the export goals of the two countries. They highlighted that the development of sustainable trade and exports is the most important task of this center in Kabul.
Many believe the opening of such trade centers would have positive effects on Afghanistan's economy that has taken a lot of damage due to years of political and financial instability. Abdullah Mirzadeh, Kabul.
Even though inflation remains at a 40-year high, United States President Joe Biden has terminated a program which provided extra food money for over 40 million of the poorest Americans. The elderly, the disabled, students, poor children, and the working poor are now forced to find an average of nearly $100 more every month to spend on food. With sanctions on Russia still massively backfiring across the West, grocery prices here have soared more than 11% over the last year.
The families aren't purchasing food at the same price that they were pre-pandemic. So apart from having families come in more often, we may start seeing families that have to cut back on their housing budget. So what they typically spent on rent, utilities, they may have to start dipping into that to pay for groceries.
Experts on food insecurity contend that food aid to the poor has been insufficient, and that was long before the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program started seeing cuts. The expansion of so-called food stamps was both popular and successful, leading to an immediate 10% reduction in the overall poverty rate and a 14% drop in child poverty.
Versus 2021, when a lot of the pandemic relief was in force, our numbers were actually down significantly. So we've seen our numbers grow from 2021 to 2022 about 40%. Give or take, we can only imagine what this next round will bring.
Without government involvement, citizens can only turn to charities for help. In states which have prematurely stopped the expanded food aid, Food banks are already reporting a 40% increase in the number of visitors. Last year, the ruling Democrats voted to end the pandemic's expansion of Medicaid, the federal program which provides a bare minimum of health care for the nation's poor. At the end of this month, at least 15 million people will also lose their health care coverage. Ramin Mazahari, Chicago.
By some accounts, the history of animation stretches back to the turn of the 20th century. However, the art finds its roots in antiquity. A 5,200-year-old vase found in Iran's burnt city in the 1970s features a series of five images that researchers have only recently identified as being sequential. Giving it a spin, one would see a goat leaping to snatch leaves from a tree. Fast forward to today, Iranian animations have made significant progress. While the first modern cinematic animations were produced in Iran about a decade ago, thanks to the efforts by Iran's talented youths, the country's animated movies have attracted the attention of a huge number of viewers. The number of high-quality animations has grown compared to previous years in Iran. The new award-winning animated blockbuster Lupetu is a perfect example. The name Lupetu is inspired by a word local people in Kerman province of Iran used to refer to handmade toys that mothers used to make for their children in the past. The animation is about a sanitarium where a doctor treats his mental patients by teaching them to make toys. An unknown culprit vandalizes the creative toy workshop, which is particularly popular among Iranian children, and causes its closure. The doctor's son, Ali, tries to help his father to solve the problem. The process of making the animation took over 3 years. It was ready to be screened in 2020. However, the coronavirus outbreak delayed the screening, and finally, it hit Iran's silver screens from early November 2022. The box office hit is one of the most popular on-screen films of Iranian cinemas right now. It managed to become the most popular movie in Iranian cinemas only within a month and a half of its release in the fall season. Lupetu has also taken part in various national and international festivals. Despite their success, the director of Lupetu says there is no room for complacency, adding, Iranian animation studios should redouble their efforts to keep up with the big names in the industry.
Iran's animation industry is progressing. It's perfect that children can watch this animation in the cinemas. But we have a long way to go. We should produce more high-quality cinematic animations to keep up with foreign animations.
Lupetu's producers say it will soon be screened in other countries, with Turkey and Russia showing interest to screen the animation in their cinemas.
Several high-quality cinematic animations have been made in Iran in recent years, and Lupetu is one of them. The blockbuster animation's success testifies that Iran has made significant progress that puts it on a par with big names in the industry.
In order to avoid paying billions of dollars in fines, it appears that the Pakistani government is attempting to find a solution for the completion of an Iran-Pakistan gas pipeline project. This comes after Pakistani lawmakers demanded progress on the publicly funded project and warned that Pakistan could face its penalty if the pipeline project with Iran is not completed before the year end. The Petroleum Ministry officials warn that Pakistan will have to pay $18 billion as a fine if it terminates Iran-Pakistan gas pipeline agreement. The officials told lawmakers that Islamabad has spoken to the United States to request a waiver as there is a ban on importing gas from Iran. The parliamentarians asked the Pakistani Ministry of Foreign Affairs to summon the American envoy and demand that he either grant Islamabad permission to move forward with the project or provide funding to cover the fine. Washington has been pushing Islamabad to give up the plan to import gas from neighboring Iran. However, the government has so far publicly resisted the pressure, arguing that the project is vital to fulfill the country's energy needs.
We should revive the Iran-Pakistan pipeline. That is the key. And we also demand the lifting of sanctions which have been imposed by certain Western countries against Iran, because the sanctions are wrong, they are unjust, and they are immoral. And Iran, like Pakistan, is a peaceful country. They want to strengthen regional relations.
Like the rest of the world, Pakistan is no exception to the global energy crisis, which is worsening each passing day. Experts believe that pending gas pipeline project with Iran could be an immediate remedy to overcome the energy needs in Pakistan if the country manages to get out of the U.S. influence.
Because of the U.S. Importance in foreign relations, Pakistan has always been pressurized by the United States not to increase its trade with Iran and not to negotiate any agreements with Iran. Unfortunately, Pakistan has yielded to that pressure. Pakistan is importing gas from Qatar and other countries, Azerbaijan even, and why not import gas from Iran, which is cheaper than from so many other countries.
In 2009, the gas companies of both Pakistan and Iran signed an agreement under which Islamabad committed to building an 800-kilometer pipeline to the Iranian border by the end of 2014. However, due to the U.S. pressure, Islamabad could not fulfill its commitment. Iran has already finished a portion of the pipeline in its own territory from the gas field to the Pakistan border, where it should connect to the Pakistani part.
The call on the Pakistani government to step up efforts to complete Iran-Pakistan gas pipeline project comes as Islamabad is already grappling with several crises here at home. Avoiding this $18 billion penalty could save the country from falling into another one. Nasir Kazmi, Islamabad.
Join us in this journey. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
Since 2007, the fabricated regime of Israel has banned any equipment access for the civil defense in Gaza. This issue has caused many problems for the residents of this blockaded enclave. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. Palestine Chronicle wrote in this regard, on December 18, 2022, a house fire in Gaza killed 21 civilians, including 10 children, all belonging to the same family. They were celebrating a birthday when the gasoline that they had stored fueled the devastating fire. This terrible accident left Palestinians in Gaza with a deep loss. They are still mourning, especially the people in Jabalia camp, where the family lived. When the house fire started, we heard people screaming. We rushed to help. The fire was raging and there were a woman and her child trying to get out of the window as they were burning, said Muhammad Al-Khaldi, an eyewitness. Al-Khaldi added, the window was closed with iron bars. They couldn't escape and we couldn't help. Even though the metal gate to the building was closed, neighbors managed to break through. They rushed to the burning third-story apartment. The door was closed, airtight. They spent more than half an hour trying to break through to the apartment as they waited for the civil defense unit, which they had called to help fight the fire. When the neighbors reached the house, the fire was already intense. The smoke was severe. They could barely see, but they realized there was a big number of victims in one room. The civil defense arrived 30 minutes after the first call. Soon, they ran out of water and tried to get more water from a well in the neighborhood, which unfortunately was inaccessible because the electricity was cut off. The civil defense workers decided to bring water from another neighborhood. When they finally managed to extinguish the fire, everyone was found burned and dead. The civil defense confronts a huge shortage of equipment. Mahmoud Basal, spokesman of the civil defense unit in Gaza, told the Palestine Chronicle. Basal added, "Since 2007, Israel has banned any equipment access for the civil defense in Gaza. We face intense military escalations launched by Israel now and then. The situation here is very dangerous. We need an empowered civil defense." In 2007, the fabricated regime of Israel imposed a lockdown over Gaza, which has severely impacted people due to electricity cuts, water and air pollution, shortage of medical and civil defense equipment. Even though the recent house fire was not caused by an Israeli regime attack, Palestinians nevertheless blamed the Zionist regime for the civil defense weak and insufficient response. In fact, due to the hermetic Israeli regime blockade of Gaza and its harmful impact, civil defense in particular cannot perform its duties to the fullest extent. On May 16, 2021, the Zionist regime targeted Al-Wahda Street in Gaza City, leaving at least 44 Palestinians, including 18 children, killed. For about an hour, Israeli regime bombs rained down on the area. The homes eventually collapsed on the families living in them. With surrounding streets severely damaged, it was difficult for ambulances from the nearby Al-Shifa Hospital to reach the site of the bombing. Palestine rescue teams spent days pulling bodies from the rubble, dead and alive. "When there is a military escalation in Gaza, I don't go home," Mustafa Hamdan, a civil defense worker who witnessed the Al-Wahda bombardment, told the Palestine Chronicle. Hamdan added, "Do you know that there is no real international immunity for civil defense workers in Gaza? We sacrifice our lives for our people, but we desperately need better equipment. Our inability to do our job well is not a matter of laziness, but because we don't have adequate tools." In 2014, the Zionist regime bombed a civil defense vehicle in which Rami Daher, a civil worker, was killed in Ash-Shujaiya camp. Many civil defense workers were killed during previous intense Israeli assaults over Gaza while they were doing their work, Hamdan continued. When Hamdan reached Al-Wahda Street, it was full of rubble and destruction. He was horrified by the scene. It took him a while to grasp the shock and decide what to do. He said, "I needed a lot of civil defense supplies. I recall I needed modern bulldozers and sensors to know where the victims were. I was able to save a few people. I remember Shukri and Zainab Al-Kulak. I would have been able to rescue more had we had better equipment." In the latest assault over Gaza on August 6, 2022, the Zionist regime targeted a residential building in Al-Shut camp, a very crowded neighborhood. A few houses were entirely destroyed and many others were partially damaged. 8 Palestinians were killed during the airstrike. When the civil defense arrived, they managed to put out a house fire. Then, the civil defense could pull 4 injured women, 3 children, and 2 dead bodies from the rubble. They were actually digging with their bare hands. They couldn't continue that way and ask for a heavier bulldozer and more workers to come from the northern area of the strip to the southern, which takes approximately 2 hours. Meanwhile, they waited for permission from 2 of the neighbors to let them destroy their already damaged houses to make space for the diggers and bulldozers to drive through. With no hesitation, the neighbors agreed. Palestine Judah, an eyewitness, told the Palestine Chronicle, "After 2 hours, the heavy bulldozer reached the house. The civil defense pulled out the dead bodies. 2 of them died from lack of oxygen. They could have saved them, but the bulldozer arrived too late, and rescue equipment was not sophisticated enough to rescue the people. We need more workers. We need more sophisticated equipment to be able to rescue people," said Osama Abu Mohsen, a civil defense worker who participated in the rescue operation in Al-Shut refugee camp. Abu Mohsen continued, "If the world really cared about us, they could supply us with training and equipment. Unfortunately, the civil defense in Gaza confronts quite a huge shortage of equipment and training. In times of any aggression, assaults, or urgent accidents by the Zionist regime, we have to reach out to other institutions and organizations." The civil defense spokesman, Mahmoud Al-Basal, continued.
Sheikh Baqir Sharif Al-Qarashi decides to compile...
So we can consider Sayyid Hadi Khosrow Shahi...
Shahid Muhammad Baqir al-Sadr.
He was born in Qadhimiyya.
The first and the most important thing that we can learn from Allama Tabatabai is his great effort.
In this regard, I should like to say that one of the great benefits of the late Ayatollah Sayyid Mahmoud Shahrudi was...
When we look at the works of late Rawzati, we see...
There is a famous sentence from Mirza Khalil Qamarani that he says in Farsi, "Tuhid kalame baraye kalame tuhid."
Be more familiar with outstanding Shia figures in the teacher.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio Call of Islam page. Very welcome to another episode of the program The Teacher, an introduction into the thoughts and works of the most outstanding Muslim Shiite dignitaries and scholars. I am Atta, the host of this program. With me in the studio are 2 guest speakers from the Islamic House of Qom, Shaykh Rouhani and Sayyid Mohsen Naqvi. Assalamu alaikum, Shaykh Rouhani. Welcome to your show.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
And Sayyid Mohsen, assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
For today's discussion, we want to talk about one of the most outstanding fuqaha of the 8th century Hijra, Muhammad ibn Hassan al-Hilli, mainly known as Fakhrul Muhaqqiqin, the son of Allama al-Hilli. Fakhrul Muhaqqiqin is the author of Izahul Fawaid fi Sharh Mushkilat al-Ghawaid, which was very much paid attention to by the next generation of the fuqaha. Shaykh Rouhani, let's be a little bit familiar with Muhammad ibn Hassan al-Hilli from your time, his early life.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Of course, Muhammad ibn Hassan al-Hilli, known as Fakhrul Muhaqqiqin, is one of the great and outstanding scholars of Tashayyu, living in 7th century of Islam. So, of course, he was son of Allama al-Hilli. He became a mujtahid when he was young, a young man. Regarding his life, it should be mentioned that he was born in Hilla, one of the cities of Iraq. And among the teachers of him, there are great scholars that taught him in the early part of his life. Regarding the works written by him, we can mention some of them as Ilah al-Fawaid, yes, which is very much well known. And of course, another work of him, another book written by him is Sharh al-Qawa'id.
Yes.
And also, there are some commentaries of him like Sharh al-Mabadi, Sharh al-Irshad. Then, of course, some of his books are like question and answer. And among students of him, there are again very great scholars like the first Shahid, Shahid Awwal, and Sayyid Haydar Amuli.
Yes.
Yes, and these are the some of the great scholars that were the students of this great scholar.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. What about Fakhr al-Muhaqqiqin? Fakhr, the literal meaning is the honor and the honor of the researchers.
Yes.
Because he was the son of Allama Hilli. And about Fakhr al-Muhaqqiqin, we have different views from the ulama. Some of the ulama believed that he became an alim, a true alim, at a very early age, while he was 8 or 9 years old.
Okay.
And the book, which was the Al-Fawaid, which was written by him, it was actually the explanation of his father's book, Al-Qawa'id.
Yes.
And he wrote it at the age of 10, when he was 10 years old.
Oh.
So for such a child at this early age, getting into the deep, we can say, like discussions of the jurisprudence,
yes,
the theology, and proving or maybe, you know, bringing reasoning in that at this early age. That's why this was one of the reasons that he was called as Fakhr al-Muhaqqiqin.
Yes.
Because he had given explanation of the books which were written by his father, even, you know, Al-Fain was completed by him,
yes,
which was from his father, but he completed that. So he completed the book of his father, like Al-Fain, and he put the extra, we can say, you know, the explanation, which is known as Hashiya,
yes,
like in Arabic and Persian we call it, that you add your own commentary on the book. Therefore, this was the main work. And other than that, he had so many works, which we can see. And the amongst his students, we can see Shahid Awwal,
yes,
the first Shahid.
Yes.
And this shows us the status of this personality.
Yes.
You know, because when you look at someone who became an alim or the scholar, or, you know, he is the person who has his own views, mm-hmm, on a specific subject at a very early age.
Yes.
You know, even generally, you know, in the Islamic sciences or in Islamic terminology, we say like before bulugh.
Yes.
If
reaching
someone,
maturity,
even,
yes.
Yeah, reaching maturity. Even, yes, if we say like he wasn't 10 years, he was older than that.
Yes.
Even at that time, it is said before he became baligh,
yes,
he was at that status.
Mm-hmm.
So this can be gained only through, you know, purification.
Yes.
The way his father raised him up. And it is also said, like in the history, it is said that he was taught by his father. His father was his main teacher.
Sure, that's
and that's why he used to rely a lot on him. And there are many books which were, you know, written by him on the request of his father.
Yes.
So basically, this shows us, that's why he was known as Fakhr al-Muhaqqiqin.
Mm-hmm.
When Allama Hilli, whose teacher or uncle was Muhaqqiq Hilli,
yes,
you know, after them, when this person is coming, who is the son of Allama Hilli, and he's relying on him and he's saying to him to write some books.
Yes.
So that's why he became the Fakhrul Muhaqqiqin, the honor
Hilli
of the
family, Ibn Fahd al-Hilli, Ibn Dawud al-Hilli, and
yes,
that region, you know, all in all, in producing outstanding scholars. This has been a nice, I think, behavior and habits among the Muslim Shia generation of the scientists and the scholarly men on that time to nurture their children in a way that they can continue the path of the father. This has been, I think, very much nice. The families produce outstanding scholars in the next and upcoming generation with producing outstanding works.
Allah, 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 IRIB English Radio. Our website is parstoday.ir.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir. La ilaha illallah. La
ilaha illallah. Okay, what about his work? I mean, the most outstanding work of Fakhrul Muhaqqiqin is Izah al-Fawaid. What is this book, Shaykh?
Yes, Izah al-Fawaid fi Sharh Mushkilat al-Qawa'id, which is one of the well-known works of Fakhrul Muhaqqiqin. Of course, it is written by him as a kind of commentary or explanation of his father's book. Regarding this book, the points that could be mentioned is that many of the great Shia scholars later consider this book among the very kind of outstanding, among the very important and significant works written by the Shia ulama.
Yes.
For example, like the people like Shaykh Baha'i, Agha Buzurg Tehrani, and these kind of scholars introduce this book as one of the very unique kind of book which were written by this great Allama. Of course, when it comes to the content of this book, it has four volumes. In the first volume, we see the ahkam regarding ibadat, like tahara, like salat, zakat, khums, sawm. These sort of things are dealt with in the first volume. In the second volume, we see the uqud, and of course, as it could be explained, that these are a kind of contract or, let's say, kind of agreement between the two sides, for example. So it could include mu'amilat, like bay', like trading, and many other transactions.
Yes.
And also in the third volume, we see like the things like nikah, like iqaad, what as it is termed as unilaterally application. And of course, in the fourth volume, we see the thing that are regarding to the daily affairs, like al-ta'im wa ashraba, and of course diyat and nadhr and uhud. These sort of things are dealt with in the fourth volume by this great scholar. And yes, these four volumes actually include all the kind of Islamic rulings or jurisprudential rulings that a person need in his life.
Okay.
When he refers to this book, he will find out answers to all of these jurisprudential questions written by this great scholar. Yes.
And in all of them, Uhud is over there. I mean, the things that are related to business and transactions. What was the main reason for that?
Well, obviously, Islam is the complete set of life.
Mm-hmm.
It's a complete set. It's not about only worshipping Allah.
Okay.
When you follow the Islam, you're living a complete life.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, worshipping is one part. The other part is socializing with the people. When you socialize with the people, obviously, there are contracts, there are dealings. And uqood is not necessarily to the business only.
Okay.
You know, the marriage contract.
Oh, like the marriage.
Marriage is what comes under
all
this.
All the contracts are
yes,
agreements.
When you give a gift, obviously, someone you give and the other has to accept that gift. This is a kind of contract as well.
Oh.
You know, all these things. So it comes under the topic of uqood, basically. And for example, renting a place. So these are the discussions that are covered over there. The thing that makes what makes this book, which was written by him, significant from the other things, and what is the, we can say the manifestation that it has. Number one, it is said that it's been narrated from the different scholars that Allama Hilli ordered his son to write this book because, you know, the title of the book is Idahul Fawaid.
Yes.
You know, explaining the positive things.
Yes.
Fi sharh mushkilat al-qawaid. In the difficulties of al-qawaid.
Al-qawaid
was the book of Allama Hilli.
Allama Hilli, that's
there were some difficulties either in the understanding the book or maybe the things were not properly explained.
Okay.
So there were some difficulties, mushkilat.
Okay.
And Allama Hilli said to his son to write a book. And in this book, he used two terminologies. Qawlihi. He said, Aqul Aise.
Oh.
You know, the book was written in this way.
My father said?
My father, yes.
Okay.
So when he says Qawlihi, or Qawluhu, like he said, and then he says, Aqul Aise.
Aise.
So basically, he's bringing his father's quotation.
Yes.
remarks, and then he's explaining that I say this should be this way, and he has solved his father's book. You know, the yes. way we talk about the Lum'ah,
or it's better to say explain, isn't
yeah.
it?
Explain, okay. It was a commentary, okay. It was an explanation. Yes. You know, the way we talk about the Lum'ah,
yes.
and then Shahid Awal wrote in, and Shahid Sani,
yes,
the
yes.
second Shahid, he came and he brought the explanation, he expanded the book.
Here.
Yes. Right. So basically, similarly, when Allama Hilli is ordering his son, and it is said he wrote until the book of Nikah when his father was alive, and later he completed the book.
Mm-hmm.
So he did some of that in his father's life.
Yes.
And this is important that, you know, how much his father used to rely on him,
yes.
that instead of him himself in entering into writing the book and explaining the things,
yes.
he left it over his son.
Okay.
And he led him to do this, and to maybe, if he has any comments, maybe he has an argument on this, maybe
yes.
he is bringing a reason against what his father has said, or maybe a new thing about that.
Mm-hmm.
So he gave him the open hand.
Yes.
And it shows that how important was he in the eyes of his father as a scholar.
A scholar, that's right.
You know, person, like a personality, as a knowledgeable person. So this was all about his book, which was written by him.
That's all right. And it's still very much referred to in even today's generation of the ulama of the Islamic seminaries all across the Shia world. Okay. Thank you very much, Sayyid Mohsin Nawawi and Shaykh Rouhani, for a nice elaboration regarding the life of Muhammad ibn Hassan al-Hilli, mainly known as Fakhr al-Muhaqqiqin, the son of Allama al-Hilli. He passed away at the age of 89 in the year 771, according to this lunar Hijri calendar. According to so many documents, his body was taken to the city of Najaf, and he was buried beside his father. But still, it is not exactly known where is his exact burial place. May Allah bless the soul of this outstanding man. And thank you much, dear listeners, for listening to us. For more information on this program and our previous episodes of the program, The Teacher, visit our website at parstoday.ir. To another episode, God bless you all.
A teacher, the teacher of teachers. He changed the world for the better and made us better creatures. Oh Allah, we've shamed ourselves, we've strayed from Al-Mu'allim. Surely we've wronged ourselves, what will we say in front of him?
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.